All right, so you're a law student in Florida, and maybe you're thinking, hey, I'm never going to touch personal injury law, but trust me, this case we're diving into today, it impacts way more than just slip and falls.
It really does.
This is Lasky v. State Farm. It's from 1974, and it's kind of this epic battle over whether the legislature can actually mess with your future client's ability to sue after a car accident.
Huge implications, big time.
So we're gonna like really dissect this Lasky ruling, see where the justices agreed, where they threw down these dissenting opinions, and by the end, you'll totally get why this case is still like required reading for anyone even thinking about practicing law in the Sunshine State.
You got it. And to get there, what are we looking at today? What sources are we going to be using for this deep dive?
Oh, excellent point. We've got the actual Florida Supreme Court opinion, obviously. Plus, we found this awesome case brief that really breaks down like the whole timeline of the case and all the legal arguments back and forth.
Oh.
And then just to mix things up, we've even got some notes from another podcast that tackled this case, you know, just to get a different perspective.
Always good to have multiple takes.
Yeah.
Okay, so where do we even begin with something this big?
Okay, so first things first, we got to set the scene.
Right.
Like, what actually happened? How'd this even end up in the Florida Supreme Court? The whole shebang. Then we'll get into like the nitty-gritty, the constitutional questions that the justices had to wrestle with. And of course, we'll break down the majority opinion, like what was their logic? What principles did they base their decision on? But, and this is huge, we can't forget about those dissenting opinions
Right,
because
yeah.
they often point out like the flaws or, you know, the other side of the coin. And finally, we'll tie it all together and explain why a case about no-fault insurance from like the disco era still matters so much today.
Sounds like a plan. Let's dive into that background then. Set the stage.
All right, so picture this. February 1972. Ann Lasky, she's driving her husband's, well, let's just say classic 1958 Ford, gets into an accident with some guy, a Mr. May. Thankfully, nobody's like seriously hurt, but she does get some injuries. And that poor 58 Ford, totaled.
Ouch. Totaled, huh? So, what happens next? This is where that new Florida no-fault law comes in, right?
Bingo. And here's the catch. Even though her car was like scrap metal, the value of the car didn't hit the $550 property damage limit the law had set.
Ah, so there's a threshold.
Yeah, like a legal bar. If the damage wasn't bad enough, you couldn't sue for it.
I see. And her personal injuries too, right? There was a similar situation there.
Exactly. Her injuries didn't fit into those specific categories the law said you automatically could sue for, like, you know, if you had a permanent scar or some kind of serious long-term injury. And to make matters worse, there was another hurdle. She had to rack up at least $1,000 in medical bills to sue for pain and suffering.
And she didn't hit that, I'm guessing.
Nope. So basically, she's stuck, hurt, car's gone, but the law is saying, tough luck, you can't sue.
Wow. So
Yeah.
what did they do?
Well, Ann and Robert Lasky, they weren't going to just take that lying down. They filed a lawsuit anyway. They wanted money for her injuries, the pain and suffering, and of course, for their totaled car. But the trial court took the defendant's side and said, nope, the no-fault law says you're out of luck. And get this, they even said the law itself was totally constitutional.
Okay, so that ruling sends this straight to the Florida Supreme Court, right?
So now the big question in front of the Florida Supreme Court, are these thresholds in the no-fault law, the $550 for property and the $1,000 for personal injury, are those even constitutional? Do they violate her right to due process, equal protection, or that right to access the courts Florida's constitution guarantees?
Really digging into the heavy hitters of constitutional law here.
Right. It's a big deal. And here's the crazy part. The court, in their majority opinion, they actually say most of the no-fault law is fine.
Yeah.
And to figure that out, they started by looking at what the legislature was even trying to do with this whole no-fault system.
Good place to start, I guess.
Yeah.
What was the legislature aiming for with this?
Well, the court recognized that the legislature was dealing with a real mess. Back then, just like now, actually, courts were jammed up with these car accident cases. It took forever to get your day in court. Costs were through the roof for everyone, lawyers, insurance companies, everyone.
Yeah.
The whole system was just slow and a headache.
Right. Yeah, I can see that.
So no fault was meant to be this like trade-off. The idea was, okay, we'll limit when people can sue for minor injuries, but in return, they get this guaranteed quick payout for some of their losses. This is where PIP comes in, personal injury protection.
Oh, right, PIP. So your own insurance covers some stuff no matter who's at fault, right?
Exactly. It doesn't matter who messed up, your insurer covers your initial medical bills and lost wages. up to a certain amount.
Okay, so the court saw this as a compromise of sorts. You give up some of your right to sue, but you get this faster, more certain payment for your immediate costs.
Exactly, and this is where a past case, Kluger v. White, comes in. In Kluger, the court had struck down a law that completely wiped out a cause of action without offering any replacement. So the Laskys were saying, hey, this no-fault law is doing the same thing. It's shutting us out of court without a real alternative.
Interesting. But the Lasky court didn't see it that way, did they?
Nope. They said, hold on, PIP benefits, that's your reasonable alternative. They said the legislature didn't completely eliminate the right to sue, they just put some limits on it. And those limits, well, they were based on trying to make the system work better overall.
And it's really interesting how Lasky kind of cemented this idea that courts will accept these kinds of trade-offs when the legislature is trying to regulate economic stuff, that whole rational basis review idea. It's had a huge ripple effect on tons of areas of Florida law.
For sure. And speaking of rational basis review, that's how the court looked at the equal protection argument. That's the argument that this law was discriminating against certain groups. So with rational basis, the court's just asking, is there any legitimate reason for this law? And does the law kind of sort of make sense in achieving that goal?
Yeah. So it's pretty low bar. They're not looking for the perfect solution, just like a logical connection.
Right. And they decided that the $1,000 threshold, yeah, it's connected to how bad your injuries are. The idea being the more you rack up in medical bills, the worse your injuries must be, and the more you should be able to sue for pain and suffering, and the property damage limit. Same thing. They saw that as trying to keep the courts from getting swamped with like fender bender cases.
Makes sense. But they did shoot down one part of the law, right? On equal protection grounds.
Oh, absolutely. This is where things get even juicier. The law had this weird thing where if you broke certain bones, specific types of fractures, you could sue for pain and suffering even if you hadn't hit that $1,000 mark.
Huh. That's odd.
Right. And the court's like, this makes no sense. There's no reason to treat someone with like a particular kind of broken leg differently from someone who has, say, massive soft tissue damage that costs just as much or even more to treat. Why should one get to sue while the other's stuck? They said it was arbitrary.
So even with that super relaxed rational basis review, that fracture exception just didn't fly. It seemed like favoritism without any logic.
Exactly. But hold on, there's more. Even though most of the court was on board, there were some strong opinions from the justices who weren't totally happy with the outcome.
Oh, yeah. Like who?
Justice Irvin, he wrote this concurring opinion where he basically says, guys, I get what you're doing, but I'm not cool with this overall.
What was his beef?
Well, he was worried that these money limits, especially that $1,000 medical expense thing, were basically discriminating against people who weren't rich. He's saying, look, if you got money, you're going to get more treatment, hit that $1,000 easily, and be able to sue. But if you're broke, you might skip some treatments, try to save money, and then bam, you're locked out of court.
So he saw it as creating a two-tiered system based on your bank account.
Exactly. He even argued that those PIP benefits, while helpful, weren't a real replacement for being able to sue for pain and suffering. And remember, those benefits come from your insurer, not necessarily the person who caused the accident.
Yeah.
Justice Irvin felt like the whole thing was basically a win for insurance companies and a loss for everyday people.
Powerful argument.
Right. And we can't forget Justice Boyd's dissent. Now, his was short and sweet. I dissent.
To the point.
Right. But even just those two words, they show just how much he disagreed with the whole thing, the majority's logic, the balancing deck they were trying to pull off. He's just like, nope, not buying it.
I like it. Straight to the point. Okay, so let's zoom out for a sec. What are some of the big legal ideas that Lasky highlights?
Okay, so first up, we've got that reasonable alternative thing from Kluger. Basically, if the legislature wants to limit or like totally get rid of a legal remedy, they got to offer something else in its place. It's got to be a fair replacement.
And then there's that rational basis review, right? The standard the courts use when they're looking at these economic regulations. It's like, is there some logical link between the law and what the government's trying to do? It doesn't have to be perfect, just reasonable.
Yep. But Lasky also shows us that even with that relaxed standard, a law can still be unconstitutional if it creates these random unfair distinctions, like that whole fracture exception thing.
And Justice Irvin really drives home the point that we got to think about how these laws actually play out in the real world. Who do they help? Who do they hurt? He was all about making sure the law wasn't creating a system where being rich means you get more justice.
Absolutely. So back to why Lasky still matters for you all, the future legal eagles. First off, this is the case for understanding Florida's no-fault insurance system, which, by the way, is still around today, though it's been tweaked over the years.
Makes sense. It's like the foundation.
And it's a perfect example of how courts handle these constitutional challenges to tort reform. You see that tug of war between wanting a system that runs smoothly and protecting people's fundamental rights to go to court and get justice.
Right, and we see those different levels of judicial scrutiny in action. Rational basis review, but also how a court can say, hey, even with that, this law is just too messed up, too discriminatory.
Totally. And then there's Justice Ervin reminding us to always think about the real-world impact. Like, do these laws actually help everyone equally, or are they creating a system that favors the wealthy? That's something every lawyer needs to be thinking about.
Couldn't agree more. So, just to recap, the Florida Supreme Court, they mostly gave the thumbs up to the no-fault system. They said those PIP benefits were a reasonable alternative under the Kluger standard. They used rational basis review and said, yeah, most of this law makes sense for achieving the legislature's goals. But they did strike down that weird fracture exception, said it was a violation of equal protection because it was just picking favorites without a good reason.
Nailed it. And for all of you listening, remember, Lasky shows you that balance between legislative reform, individual rights, and the court's role in keeping everything in check.
Exactly. It's a must-know for anyone wanting to practice law here in Florida.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? The no-fault system, it's not frozen in time. It's changed since 74. So what does that mean for the future? Are the compromises they made back then still fair? And what new legal arguments might pop up as the system keeps adapting?
It's a constantly evolving area of law.
Totally. Lots to think about. So keep that in mind. As you study, as you start your careers, this stuff, it's not just dusty old case law. It's the foundation of how we handle car accidents, insurance, and access to justice, like, every single day.
For sure. That's why we do these deep dives.
Exactly. All right, everyone. That's Lasky Unpacked. See you next time for another deep dive.
Yeah.